A warm welcome to new listeners and old friends. This is the latest episode of Talking Golf.
We believe it is so big that it can be a format that can definitely revolutionize the game.
This week in Talking Golf, we're very lucky to be joined by one of the most influential men in world golf. Keith Pelly is the chief executive of the European Tour, and his forward-thinking and innovative approach has changed the professional game in Europe. Welcome, Keith.
Hey, glad to be here.
Thank you for taking the time to join us. Why don't we start by telling the listeners a little bit about your background, how you've ended up from good old Canada in the UK running the European Tour.
Absolutely, yeah. I grew up in Canada, love in Toronto. I love my country. It's fantastic. But I also love Europe and love London, and had a chance back in 95 and 96 as I was working for Fox at the time, producing NFL Europe. You remember NFL Europe? Yeah, you know, there were six
Edinburgh
teams.
Edinburgh, the team, didn't they?
Yeah, well, it was Dusseldorf, Frankfurt, Amsterdam, Scottish Claymores.
There we go.
Scottish Claymores in Glasgow.
Okay, there we
Amsterdam Admirals, London Monarchs, and the Barcelona Dragons. So I was working for Fox, and Fox is, what a wonderful company back in 95 and 96. And then I was producing NFL in the off seasons.
Yeah.
They put me up the very first year in Chelsea on Sloane Avenue.
Lovely.
Outstanding.
Nice introduction to London.
Second, St. James Park.
Even better introduction.
Yeah. Right underneath I stayed the Albert Pub, which is the oldest pub in London. Right? I never forget. And I'm young at this particular time. Mm-hmm. And we started playing, we started playing airport roulette on our days off. So you would go to the airport and the next flight within 90 minutes, you would get on. So that's how I ended up in Nijmegen, Holland, and Bruges, Belgium. It was fantastic. And I ended up trading a lot of the guys for Scottish Claymore games.
Yep.
And then I would go up and I would stay in the Dunvegan with Jack and Sheena.
Yep.
Yeah.
And
play the old course. And so I loved Europe, loved the proximity of so many great cities around London. And then when I got an opportunity, and I've always loved golf, when I got an opportunity, I was really enjoying my life in Canada. And when I got a call for the European Tour, I was intrigued.
Yeah.
I looked up Wentworth during the actual phone call and I went, whoa. Wow, this place is pretty nice. I had some dialogue that night with my charming bride who said, let's go. Because she remembers back 95, 96. I was courting her at the time. And we got married in 96. And she said, hey, listen, if life's about adventures, let's go on an epic adventure. Then I came over, met the board, met the chairman, and fell in love with the opportunity, right? And they really were... interested in change. They were okay with us looking at golf in a different way. And I think they wanted somebody who hasn't been in golf, who had a very strong media marketing background. So it all came together and just having an absolute blast.
So this must be coming on your third.
Yeah, it's coming third year, I guess September. Yeah.
So what intrigued you?
Well, I think as I said, I've never worked in golf before, but I've always loved it. You know, grew up with the game, played every day, 36 holes, played in tournaments as a kid, got to a 2 handicap, could never get any better. My 3 pals were all scratches, so I'd lose every single day. but I had a little trouble with the 3-footer. So I loved the game. Once I came over here. And again, I loved Europe, liked that concept, taking the family on an adventure, and loved the vision of the chairman and the nomination committee at that particular time, and was really intrigued and thought that it was a great opportunity, a challenge at the same time, but they were willing to look at golf in a different way, and so I think the combination of all those three intrigued me.
Is it harsh to say that the game was getting the professional game was getting a little stale here? Well, going back 4 or 5 years, maybe?
You know, it's interesting because I've learned a lot about the game and learned a lot about all facets of the industry over the last 2.5 years. And when you actually look at it and you break down, you've got the PGA Tour ourselves, then you got the Asian Tour, the Japanese Tour, the Sunshine Tour, the Australian Tour, which I guess are the 6 biggest tours in the world. Mm-hmm. There's 150 72-hole golf tournaments. That's a lot,
yeah.
Right? And it's very confusing for the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, sport all comes down to the consumer. And I just thought that there was a need and a narrative for looking to change or adapt or modify without taking away any of the integrity or the history of the game. Because the 72 hole tournament will always be the core of what we do.
It's not going anywhere.
You know, and it'll always be the part of the majors and the Rolex series and the World Golf Championships and the national championships. But beyond that, there is a need to look at it in a different light in order to expand the love and the engagement of our great game. And that's what this is all about. You know, the creation of Golf Sixes or the Shot Clock Masters or what's happening this week with the Belgian Countdown are all in search of a new format that can generate interest with a new generation. And that's what this is all about.
Yep. And not to replace what already exists in terms of traditional 72-hole stroke play.
No. We'll always maintain, like I said, that great, wonderful history of the 72-hole tournament. But if you take a look at what's happening not only at the professional game, what's happening in the amateur game. You know, you saw the unbelievable results and research that was done about the growth of 9-hole, right? I believe... And I'm on record to say this, I believe that one of the future of the game is 6 holes. And I mean the amateur game. And I think golf courses should be built 6-6-6 with the clubhouse in the middle. Because we're living in a generation where time is critical and there is a saturation of opportunities and a saturation of content that's available to millennials and Gen Z. And let's be honest, right? I'm not in that demographic and I still love to play the 18 holes. But if you're a millennial and your attention span is 12 seconds, which a millennial 1985 to 2000, and if you're a Gen Z from 2000 beyond, your attention span is 8 seconds.
Yeah.
Right. So, and like I said, the number one anxiety for millennials is choice overload. So the saturation of choice is incredible. So I think we need to modify ourselves in order to reach a larger audience. And I think this is happening in all sport. And I think it's happening in all business. Mm. And if you're not prepared to actually modify, if you're not prepared to make minor changes, then I think you run the risk of falling behind. And that's what this is all about. And I also believe you, and this is something that, that you know, the research is there for. Bigger events are getting bigger, right? And other events are getting suppressed. So the need to be innovative in those other events to stand above the rest, I think is critical going forward.
Okay, well, while we're on that note, let's discuss Golf Sixes. Because for me, that was, I've been to both events, and I have to say that it was certainly one of my most memorable golf events of last year. But to seem to get a lot of criticism from the traditional side, who don't, I suspect, understand that it's not a golf tournament, it's a sporting event rather than, or an entertainment event with golf rather than a golf tournament. How did that come about? How did you come up with the format? What's the background to that?
You know, the interesting thing is what you didn't see is very, very, very little criticism socially, right? You saw 90% positive, and that's all that matters.
And the best golf audience that I saw all year.
And that's correct. And that's all that matters.
No golf clothing, right? Lots of children, lots of families.
When you have some of the traditional journalists, but there are only some, like, because there were some very, very good traditional journalists that went, aha, I see what you're trying to do. But it starts by anybody that criticizes Golf Sixes doesn't understand what it's there for.
100%.
Right?
Yeah,
and I almost say in a strange way, anybody that criticizes Golf Sixes doesn't want our game to grow. Because if you believe that our game is only going to grow by doing the same thing week in and week out, you're wrong, right?
Fundamentally flawed
belief.
No
question.
Yeah.
No question. If you're not modifying and you're not changing to a changing society and people's behaviors that are changing rapidly, you will fall behind, right? There are so many examples of companies that have said, well, that's never going to happen, or that's a crazy idea. And we all know the ones that we're talking about. And the next thing you know, they're bankrupt.
They're paying the price.
Right.
Literally.
So Golf Sixes was something that that was discussed regarding the pace of the game, how long it takes. But really, it was started by the core of trying to go for a younger audience. So, for example, and this is the audience for Golf Sixes this year was 34, was the average age, wow, as opposed to 53 for a regular audience for a regular tour event. That's significant.
And that's based on TV viewing numbers. Okay. Because as I said, I thought it was a fantastic event, being able to go and there were so many children there who clearly weren't golfers, but were engaged in a golf event.
Oh, yeah. But that's what it was for. And what you said is golf event.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, it has to be an event first. Yeah. And now, everything that we do, we have two words. It needs to be, anything that we're doing around innovation or expanding the game needs to be credible, mm-hmm, yet entertaining.
Okay.
Right? But it's got to be credible, right? And that was very entertaining, massive engagement from the players. Mm-hmm. They all loved it. They all absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it was serious golf. There's no question. And especially as you got down to the last groups on Sunday, you know, you're playing for a lot of money, right? This is, you take a look at, you know, Gavin Monahan and Paul Dunn, you know, from Ireland, and Gavin Monahan winning 100,000, right? That's the biggest check of his career by a landslide.
Well, that must trump his existing career earnings to this point.
Yeah, he might.
Yeah.
Might. It became very, very serious. So that's what I mean by it's credible and it's entertaining at the same time.
Yeah. And you talked a little bit about the players engaging, which is very obvious at that tournament.
Yeah.
Maybe not so obvious at other events. How much does the tour have to encourage the players to be a little bit more outgoing, a bit more giving with their time, a bit more giving with their personality, actually interacting with the crowd?
Yeah. I the players don't say no very often when you ask. You know, part of it is we don't ask enough because we've never historically asked.
Yeah.
But I've found that the players have embraced innovation brilliantly. In fact, it was Lee Westwood at the tournament committee that said to Golf Sixes, saying, listen, why don't you create four wildcard positions and Keith, you and your team decide what you want to do with them, whatever it is to showcase the game and to build a different audience. This is our platform for engaging a different demographic, a different age group, ethnic group, income tax bracket, anybody that is not usually involved in our game, let's create a product that's different. And that's what we brought in Thomas and the Solheim Cup captain. Then we brought in the ladies' two teams.
Yep.
And it just added an energy to it. And the question now is, where does Golf Sixes go now? And I think we're on to a format that could work, that could grow. We need to commit to it, give it a better time slot or a better slot in our calendar, and perhaps start to look at creating it as a carnival for the whole week.
Yeah.
And making it a festival. And for that, we're going to need to bring in a partner. And those are some of the discussions that we've already started with. And we believe it is so big that that it can be a format that can definitely revolutionize the game. You've already got Denmark, the Netherlands, France. Now you got England Golf. You've got Belgium. All of their federations have now embraced Golf Sixes, are rolling it out to their respective golf clubs, you know, and they're coming to us. And we had three more federations approach us after Golf Sixes last week. And this is positive. You know, Portugal is interested in doing a Golf Sixes for next year, right? And they only have 14,000 golfers in Portugal. But you know, you see how they support the tennis in Portugal. Mm-hmm. They would love to support a different product than a traditional 72-hole tournament. And that's Golf Sixes. So it's generated a lot of interest. Now we have to actually commit to it and invest in it and grow it.
And it's such a club-friendly format as well, in terms of it fills the blank times that you can hold a six-hole event in the evening. You can make it into a social event at any golf club. There seems to be so many applications, if you like, for any short format, but particularly this one.
You know, I think it's the best format for it. Like I said, if you have a golf course that you have 3 6 holes, then for corporate golf is wonderful to play 6 holes, come in for lunch and play another 6 holes and then go home. Mm. Right? And it's going to take the same length of time as 18 holes because you got a lunch in between. Or, you know, I'm playing on Friday and I'd love to just play 12 holes. Mm. Right? You know, as much as I love 18 holes, it takes a long time.
It's a long walk in from the 12th
green. Long time. There's all kinds of things that you need to actually look at. Like some of the things that you study and you go, yes, the 72-hole tournament is our core, but should the other events be 54 holes? Right? These are questions, mm-hmm. right? These are questions that all the players would like to play 72 holes week after week because at the end of the time, you know, the best players always rise. There's no question. Yeah. And with 6-hole match play or 9-hole match play, anything can happen and you can be eliminated quickly. However, again, when you put the consumer first and you
that sometimes has more appeal.
You think about it, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, some of the events, you know, 54 holes, you know, Thursdays, it's sometimes tough to get excited about a Thursday afternoon golf. And I'm leading the tour.
Yeah, I walk around a lot of tour events on a Thursday, and I can understand why it isn't attractive to a lot of people.
The end of the day, you always have to listen to the consumer. Mm. Right? And we're constantly chatting to consumers. We're constantly doing focus groups, finding out, learning, hearing about what some of the challenges are and how we can grow our game. And I believe again, as content consumption changes, you know, the short form content is critical and complementary. And I guess that's the key word, complementary to the core of the 72 hole tournaments. And that's why our Rolex series, we've built them as premium events, right? Special, important, critical. But, you know, everyone is excited right now to see what happens with the Shot Clock Masters, where
was going to be my next question. So 3 weeks time, week after Italy, we've got Shot Clock Masters. Explain the format a little bit for the listeners that don't.
Every 120 players, every single player on the clock, every single shot will be timed. So we have
referee with every match.
Yeah, 22 referees. There's a cart on every single hole that has a big, huge shot clock.
Yeah,
it's linked to. To the iPad by the referee. So the referee will say to the player, he'll hit his iPad and say, "You're on the clock." Right?
45 seconds?
Yeah, it's 50 seconds, I think, is the first. First, 40, then 40. Okay. 40 seconds for the second. That might be too long, but we'll see. You know, it was interesting because we added a shot clock at the Golf Sixes, and it was no problem on the drives, right? But there were a couple times it went right down, you know, on the second shots and the putts, went right down. 30 seconds wasn't very long, right? It's amazing. If you sit, and I've done this quite a bit, if you actually, and you usually see it on Sunday in the final four or five groups, because on Thursday, Friday, you're jumping around and you're only seeing the player just hit it, right? But if you actually see the warm-up, the whole works, and you work with a stopwatch at home on your phone, you'll be amazed how many people take over a minute to hit a 10-foot putt.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah, as soon as you add any complication to it, whether it's extreme slope or extreme lie, absolutely right.
You know, so it'll be fun. Then you see how you roll that out next year, if in fact it is successful. But I shall tell you that we did a research study, and I sent out a survey to all the players saying, is slow play an issue, right? And I sent it out on a Wednesday. And by Monday, which was incredible, we had over, you know, I think it was 77-78% response back, which is
from the players.
Unbelievable, right? That's how many people answered it. Now, if you answered, there was only two questions. Is slow play a problem? Right? Now, if you answered no.
You probably didn't reply.
No, if you answered no, right? That was the end of the survey. If you answered yes, you got one more question.
Yep.
Right. The second question was, do you want the European Tour to take this very seriously and do something about it? Right. And so,
that was it.
Yeah. So the two. And just under 69% said it was a challenge and said that we need to do something about it. So we'll review after the Shot Clock Masters.
Okay. In terms of day-to-day event or week-to-week 72-hole stroke play events, there's no question that there's certainly a perception in the golfing media. Mm. I think, as you said, you speak to most players, there's a perception that it's slow. Is the tour doing enough to regulate that on a week-by-week basis?
Well, I think there's... So one of the biggest challenges with
this is the biggest problem the game has.
Well, I think one of the challenges is 3-ball to 2-ball.
Right? Yeah, I agree. Right?
So you know, you're gonna get a difference of 30, 40 minutes in difference of a 3-ball and a 2-ball. So you know, you're a members organization. So if you take a field from 156 to 120, you're gonna cut out some time.
Yep.
Right, because you're gonna play 2 balls.
Yep.
Are we doing enough? Well. That really is the purpose of the Shot Clock Masters, to see how consumers react, see how players react, see how much difference it makes. We think it's going to cut about 40 minutes off a 2-ball.
Wow.
Right? Well, that's pretty significant.
No, that's huge.
Right? We're anticipating rounds now of 315. That's completely different, right? Now you sit there and you go, so how could you roll that out? Well, you might have two or three you might have more people on the clock more often, right? So obviously one of the biggest challenges our sport has is the size of the arena. Mm. Right? This isn't something that you can shoot every single piece of action,
the variability of the arena.
Yeah, but the size of the arena, like if this was in a basketball court, a tennis court, right? You know, it'd be so much easier. You'd have one or two referees.
Yeah.
In order for us to have every player on the clock every single time, right? In a way, it's very cost inhibitive, right? So now you have to determine how you're going to do that going forward, right? So I think we've done more than any other tour in terms of slow play.
This is
a massive step forward. But the real key is if it's successful or when it's successful. What are you going to do about it?
Mm. Yeah, where do you take it after that?
Yes, that's for the next podcast.
Yeah, why not? It'd be interesting to get the players' feedback post-Austria.
Yeah, it will be.
And interesting to see what the media have to say about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so European Tour's certainly a very different environment, very different place now to 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. What's it going to look like in 3 years' time?
Mm. Oh, it's going to look like in 3 months' time.
Let's start
years.
With Rolex Series. Is the Rolex Series going to get bigger? Do you see more events being involved in that?
In between 8 to 10.
Okay.
Right. I don't see more than 10.
Yeah.
I'd rather have 8 to 10 good events than saturating it again.
Yeah.
Right. And making it 12 or 14 events. Yep. 8 to 10 strong events. No, I think if you catapult ahead 3 years, I think the Rolex Series will be strong. The national championships will be stronger. I do believe that we will have a new format, whatever that may be, right? I do believe it'll be Golf Sixes that will be flourishing and will be an integral part of our schedule.
Do you see that becoming something that migrates to North America?
Oh, no question. No question.
I've had the
conversation.
What's the PGA Tour's take on it?
I have a tremendous amount of respect for Jay. Yeah, I think he's terrific. He's certainly a player's commissioner. I think he's innovative. He's creative. He's a marketing guy. You know, they have the great luxury of having 60% of the golfers, 15,000 golf courses. But I'm trying to talk to him consistently about Golf Sixes. Would love to create a world Golf Sixes that involved the PGA Tour. I think we have so many complementary characteristics that we need to work together closer somehow. Don't know how that is, but Golf Sixes would be a wonderful way of doing such.
And you see the other tours getting involved in that as well?
Well, I think it would be, we've had a number of people inquire in Asia about launching a Golf Sixes. Mm-hmm. Again, it's part of an overall vision that we're now going to roll out because we're going to take it pretty seriously. So 3 years, I think a format will be flourishing that will be hopefully supporting what the RNA does to grow the game, mm-hmm. Both at the grassroots, but also showcasing the professional game in a different light. And outside of that, I would hope that in 3 years, the young guns that are part of the game now mm-hmm. are bigger, and it's the responsibility of us as the golf administrator, mm-hmm. bigger sports global celebrities, mm. right? And that is, you know, that is a pure commitment to social content,
yeah.
and a pure commitment to showcasing these guys, and showcasing them in a different light.
Yeah.
Because it drives me crazy at some of the other sports that are so much further ahead in terms of their athletes as far as social engagement.
And that's been driven by the organization rather than the athletes themselves?
Some by the organization, some by the athletes themselves.
Because we got some pretty switched on guys. I mean, Poulter has done an incredible job of...
We do.
Of creating a brand through social media.
But we need some aggregation of it.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah.
And we got some great guys. Fleetwood is great guy, great personality.
You know, it's interesting because you take a guy like Tommy Fleetwood. Tommy Fleetwood could be a global superstar. Mm,
absolutely. Right?
You know, Rory's a global superstar. And one of the reasons that Rory is not only because he came up in incredible young talent and was successful at a young age and he's brilliantly talented, but he has a persona, a personality, a presence that is an infectious personality. And that exists with the guys and like Tommy.
Tommy has the same, doesn't he?
Tommy has the same, right? The only thing I would say to Tommy, don't get your hair cut, right? Let's use that to build it. He could be an icon. There's no question, right? There's a perfect example of how people love personalities is Beef.
Yeah.
Right? You know, and I did a little, it was interesting. Andrew and I had this conversation because I did a little survey last year at the BMW on the first tee while he was teeing off. And I went around and I asked the people, hey, I'm just curious, where do you think he's ranked in the world? Right? And I heard everywhere from 3 to, I don't know, to 100, right?
And he was sort of, he was top 100 at the time.
Yeah, he was. But it's irrelevant.
Yeah, he's a global superstar.
He is, right? And you know, there's somebody he ever got into the top 5 in the world.
Oh man!
Look out, right? So global superstars are more than just the skill on. Yeah. They have to have the skill and the personality, right? And then it's up to both themselves and us as the organizations to trumpet them. And right now, we're doing an okay job at it.
Yeah.
But I can tell you right now, if I sat down with Tommy Fleetwood and said, Tommy, trust me, we're going to do this, this, and this, but you're going to still make sure that you focus on your golf.
Yeah.
But we're going to make you a mega superstar and, you know, you're going to monetize that in so many different ways. We could do it. I remember running a media company and we were struggling with a product called the Canadian Football League in terms of ratings.
Yeah.
And this, we were looking at the ratings. We went, oh my goodness, the ratings are just awful. What are we going to do? So we just all of a sudden said, well, why don't we start putting a game on a Friday night and we will call it Friday Night Football. Because it was one of the things with the Canadian Football League, it didn't have consistency. And the programming guy said, we've had Friday Night Football for the last 12 years. We've had a game every Friday night. We said, well, no, let's just brand it Friday Night Football. We branded it Friday Night Football, talked about finally it having consistently. We put a little bit more money into it. We increased our promotion by 100%.
Yep.
And the first year, ratings increased by 262%.
Wow.
Right? It's just, if you tell people things are important, they'll start to believe it.
And social media is so key in that these days.
It's unbelievable. You could build a brand. If any broadcaster wanted to make a star out of Tommy Fleetwood and they did it as a case study, whether it be BBC, ITV, Channel 4, Sky here, and they said, you know what? We want to make a star out of Tommy Fleetwood. We're going to put him in our dramas. We're going to put him more in our news shows. We're going to put him in our promos, this, 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 and this. We believe he has the character and the skill and the whole works. Superstar. Global superstar.
We'll have to get Tommy on to discuss this.
No, it's just about branding.
Yeah.
It's just about actually.
And interesting, the three guys that you mentioned, Rory, Tommy, and Beef, that they're authentic. The personality that you see come across through social media, yeah, who you see at golf tournaments, that's who they are.
Correct, yeah.
So important, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, so final question, Keith.
Go ahead.
What's the Pelly legacy? When you finally leave this particular role, whenever that may be, what are people going to say Keith did for the game?
Oh, yeah.
You're not allowed to say golf sixes.
No, I'm not going to say golf sixes. I'm not going to say golf sixes. What would be the legacy? Huh. I'd have to, you know what, it's too, I don't know if I'll have a legacy.
Yeah, I think you will. They'll look back and you'll have done something. I mean,
I haven't done it yet, so we'll see. Excellent. The legacy's still to come.
Keith, thank you.
Thanks, you.
Appreciate really appreciate your time.
Cheers.
Take care.